And good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. I'm Melody Cederstrom, and you're listening to Financial Survival. My co-host today is Dave Allen, as we bring you our opinion and commentary on today's economic and political events. It is Monday, May 2020. Good afternoon, Dave.
Good afternoon, Melody.
How are you today?
I'm doing great.
Wonderful. It sounds like it, Dave. I'm doing great.
Oh.
It's a Monday. Allergy season. The wind is blowing and trees are blowing and tree pollen is very high in the Ocean City area. So, and I was out in it today. So, let's see what we have with gold today. Gold got a little bit of those allergies too. It was down $4.90 right now in the New York spot price aftermarket at $16.99. Silver was down 2 pennies at $15.56. Platinum was down a dollar at $771. Palladium was up 9 at $1,959. The USDX today was higher by 0.41 at 100.16. Crude oil was down 0.06 at 24.68. And the paper markets today, you have... Let me bring this right up to you, ladies and gentlemen. It looks like my computer has a little bit of allergies, too. The Dow, I'm sure, was down 109 points at 24,221. The NASDAQ was up 71 at 9,192. The S&P, flat from Friday, 2,930. 10-year yield, 0.73%. Japan, Hong Kong. Hong Kong was up 1.5%. Japan was up 1. Europe and London seemed to be a little flat. And that seems... That's the fax line. And it seems that's about it on the markets today. And we do have some... It's very distracting. Someone's picked up my fax line, and I don't know who they are, but they fax me every 5 minutes. So it's driving me crazy. As states are beginning to reopen, you still have a little bit of the home sellers that are staying on the sidelines. The number for sale, the number of for sale listings, that plummeted in April. You had both buyers and sellers dropping out of the market. For the week ending May 2nd, total listings were down about 19% annually, and new listings were down 39%. We've had buyers ready, willing, and able, and the sellers have been the ones who have pulled their homes, changed their minds. It's probably a bigger hurdle to get over to put your home on the market and invite people in than it is to go look at homes as a buyer. So Hearst said he had two sellers in the last week who were about to list their homes, fully photographed, ready to go, and they just decided to stay put. And so it's not a lack of inventory, but he doesn't certainly don't see the loosening of this up anytime soon. He says that may be why the nation's home builders are seeing a sudden surge in demand. There's simply not enough existing home supply. You have home builders also tend to build in the suburbs, further away from urban cores, which is all kind of common sense. Dave?
Well, there's no hard data yet, Melody. Anecdotally, real estate agents are saying they're seeing more apartment renters now hunting for single-family homes. Count my daughter among them. Where that supply exists, the demand has not exactly waned, just postponed. Compass, a real estate brokerage, said the average number of its listings going under contract bottomed on April 12th and were down 40% from the average before the shelter-in-place orders began in March. Bet you that number is even higher today. By April 20th, Compass saw the average number of contracts back to where they were before the shutdown, but by the end of April, contracts were 24% than before the shutdown and up 64% from the April 12th bottom. Well, I beg your pardon. A lot of potential buyers have been shopping online using new virtual technology. Real estate agents have have offered live showings where they walk around the house while the buyer watches and ask questions over a smartphone or tablet. Now, some agents have offered solo showings of empty homes, giving the buyer a code to open the lockbox. As states reopen, however, more buyers are clearly ready to come out. Sellers? Not so sure.
Well, you know, this next thing we're going to talk about is one thing that could get my blood boiling. I mean, I think it's just totally ridiculous. But you're hearing this. I think Butch and I talked about this the other day. Well, I don't think we went in too many details about it. But in California, I mean, and what, of course, what they're paying isn't that much when you live in California. Ventura County, I don't know what kind of a zip code that is. Is it a wealthy county? Or
generally speaking, I mean, it's north of L.A., on the other side of the mountains, it's not Beverly Hills by any stretch of the imagination, but I suspect it's middle and upper middle income level living.
They only had, 19 residents. I wonder what the population is for Ventura County, California. 19 residents of the county of California have died so far from COVID. That's 0.02% of the population. Multiply that, Dave, and give me a number. Most places would consider this a rough
95,000.
But in Ventura, it's 19 too many, and the county government has now launched a contact tracing initiative. They are going to hire 50 investigators, maybe more later. And they're going to track you down. They're going to track you down. And then isolate you. And then find every one of their contacts to isolate these people as well. I mean, isn't this going a little bit too far? They also state that if someone has the virus and is living at home, in a home with other family members, they're not going to be able to keep that person in that home. So are they going to isolate them, take them out, and isolate them someplace? Lock them up?
Like.
Are they going to lock them up?
No, I don't know about that, but sure sounds that they're going to want them to look for another place. Maybe they'll take them to the Ritz-Carlton in L.A.
Maybe. Social distancing, I apologize, ladies and gentlemen, because this is just, I don't know how to stop this phone from ringing. You get a knock at the door and are forcibly removed from your home and taken away from your family just because some county bureaucrat traced you to someone who might have the virus? I mean, my gosh, Dave. I mean, people are getting insane. I mean, literally insane. In Ventura County, California, government now get to decide who gets to stay in their own private property with their families and who don't?
Well, do you know how to spell lawsuit? We'll talk a little bit more about issues like this in a little bit, just down the road, down Ventura Highway in L.A., and some of the stuff going on between L.A. City Council and hotels. But in the absence of a federal plan, a number of city and state health departments, we're reading, are seeking to fill thousands of these positions. Some call them contact tracers. Others call them COVID spies. Experts estimate that between 100 and 300,000 contact tracers, who can earn up to $65,000 a year, will be needed nationwide based on state populations and projected infection rates. Roger Shapiro, who's a professor of medicine at the Harvard School of Public Health, says it takes some training, but it's not impossible to train almost anybody with reasonable social skills who can work off a script, begin a conversation with people, convey a few key messages, and collect data. And probably look the other way when it comes to Article 5 of the U.S. Constitution. Mm-hmm. Shapiro expects demand for contact tracers to jump as businesses start to reopen and Americans resume ordinary activities, which public health experts warn could cause virus infections to flare. Meanwhile, a paper from the Brookings Institution, Washington think tank, argues that contact tracing apps could threaten privacy and serve as vehicles for abuse and disinformation while providing a false sense of security to justify reopening local and national economies well before it's safe to do so. If you're interested in one of these jobs, experts say to check your local and state health departments to see if they're hiring. Melody, we continue to see that we're living in interesting,
you know, as dangerous
scary
as that
times.
It is. I'll tell you what, as dangerous as that job would be, $65,000 isn't enough. I mean, are you kidding me? People knocking on your door, social skills? Nah. You know, I wouldn't want to be knocking on somebody's door, asking, you know, getting nosy and so forth. I mean, I think it would be a very dangerous in today's climate that we have, the on edge, the division that we have in this country anymore, and somebody's knocking on your door, and if you ignore them, it's like the census. Are they going to come back and haunt you until you do answer? I mean, it's just ridiculous, and I can't even believe that they would even consider something like that. I mean, it's what a waste of money. What a waste of money. And they don't, hey, but the federal government can give us money. They'll pay for it. They'll pay for these silly little programs. Good grief. Farmers welcome the U.S. Department of Agriculture's recent approval of $1.2 billion in contracts to buy fruits, vegetables, dairy, and meat directly from producers to donate to food banks and other nonprofits. The USDA is expected to purchase up to $3 billion in goods as farmers see demand from restaurants dry up and millions of out-of-work Americans seek food assistance. Breakdowns in the supply chain have caused concern for many farmers, dairy farmers throughout the nation. Of course, we've seen the pictures where they were forced to pour portions of their milk down the drain in April. You know what? This really should be a wake-up call, Dave. I mean, our the whole system, but when you have trade agreements, even whether they were rewritten, I mean, we import. Somebody said, well, we just need to export. We just need to quit the exports. No, yes, you need to do that, and you also need to quit the imports. Let us feed ourselves. We can't feed ourselves on our own. We import far more than we export. Why aren't we feeding ourselves? Why do we let other countries control what comes in? But yet everybody just applauds at how much, it's the amount of what we export, particularly now that we're hungry, families, it's difficult for them to get food. It just doesn't make sense, Dave. So maybe it is a wake-up call to, maybe someone will step up to the plate and get something changed. But then again, we got the Phase 1 trade deal with China, so I can't imagine any of our food exports or imports is going to change anytime soon.
Indeed. Well, Jim Mulhern, who's president and CEO of the looks like it's National Milk Producing Federation, the largest U.S. dairy farmer group, said that innovative solutions are demanded in these unprecedented times. We applaud the USDA for its actions to provide dairy products to families in need. American Farm Bureau Federation Prez Zippy Duval also praised the program. He said, "We applaud the USDA for its quick action and flexibility. These food purchases will help the hungry while providing income to farmers and ranchers who've seen some markets for their food disappear during the pandemic.
Well, you know, we're back on California. I guess California's been in the news lately because they're getting money from the government. I don't know. But they're looking to force hotels to house homeless. So we know there's been a major homeless problem there even before the virus. And now they have a program. One of the solutions is a program of the county and city of Los Angeles called Project Room Key, where hotel rooms are used to house the homeless. According to the county's website, the hotels can provide temporary housing for people experiencing homelessness who are not virus positive or symptomatic, but who are vulnerable to complications should they become complicated. I have no problem finding rooms for the homeless if you're the company and you choose to do so. But to be forced? Hundreds of properties have been explored and contacted, but not enough have said yes, apparently. While the city of Los Angeles has been looking up to house 15,000 homeless through these partnerships, it's only been able to place 1,500 in Project Room Key locations. So, Dave, else can you add to this lovely story?
Well, now, one city council member there is looking to commandeer rooms from hotels that don't willingly allow homeless individuals to stay there. LA council member Mike Bonin said, if the problems are on the hotel end, public should know why, and then we should consider commandeering. Now, for right now, the city isn't going to do that. Instead, the city council voted to identify any hotels that have refused to participate in the program to see if they've received any tax breaks. So if LA decides it wants to go the way of commandeering private property, the dean of Berkeley Law at University of California says it's legally feasible. Law school dean Erwin Chemerinsky said, the Constitution says that the government can take private property for public use so long as it pays just compensation. Now, Bonin, the councilman, said, I don't think fancy hotels should be exempt from Project Room Key. That includes the famous Ritz-Carlton, a hotel that's part of LA Live, this really impressive complex that, if you see in any pictures of it, that signed on to receive $270 million in financial incentives from the city over a 25-year period, 15 years ago. So we'll see what happens there. For now, they're not forcing it, but they could, ladies and gentlemen.
Hey, we'll be right back. We're being forced into a break. Please stay tuned.
Since the beginning of the United States, kings have sought it. Nations have fought for it. It has been traded, borrowed, purchased, and stolen. There is a reason for it. To secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity. Invest with the security of gold and silver. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Listen to Financial Survival with your host, Melody Cederstrom, on Shortwave Radio. Visit DiscountGoldAndSilverTrading.net or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. For the very best in gold and silver trading, call toll-free 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Call now.
Melody Cederstrom and CSE Talk Radio team up as Common Sense Voices of Integrity. I personally endorse Melody Cederstrom to be your trusted go-to expert for all your precious metal needs. Experts agree a financial crisis and even collapse is inevitable. Given our government's lack of economic leadership and self-interests of those in power, it's no longer a question of if you should purchase gold and silver, but if you will purchase gold and silver before it's too late. Melody encourages you to tune in each weekday morning. Visit CSE Talk Radio. CommonSenseVoicesOfIntegrity.com. We both agree truth and education are the two significant factors in both our missions. There is a wealth of misinformation out there. Let Melody and Beth Ann help you sort through the chaos and bring you home to the truths that will ensure that you and your family are protected. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading, 1-800-375-4188, or online at dgscoins.com. Melody and Beth Ann are strong forces together, working to preserve liberty and bring America home.
And welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. You're listening to Financial Survival, brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver Trading, 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Make sure you visit our website at dgscoins.com, dgscoins.com. And we wanted to do some of the financial numbers, and we just changed things up a little bit today. It's Monday, and I'm thinking to myself, we are struggling for news reports. I mean, after a while, you do get tired of talking about the virus and this and that. It's pretty much the same arguments and so forth. So, but some of the things that are important and are related to the COVID-19 is the unemployment numbers. A couple of months, nearly 2 months of this economic emergency, we had finally got a jobs report on Friday. That kind of gave us a real glimpse at what is happening. The headline numbers, at least 20.5 million jobs lost and a 14.73% U3 unemployment rate. White House economic advisor Kevin Hassett said that staggering number may get even worse. And even Treasury Secretary Steven Mnuchin said that also yesterday. Hassett said May numbers will sadly be north of 20%. Mnuchin agreed with an assertion that we're talking close to 25%. Now, this is U3. The reported numbers are probably going to get worse before they get better. The 14.7 rate shattered the post-World War II record of 10.8% touched in 1982, but that didn't include the 7 million people who became unemployed during the second half of April. That's an important part.
Yeah.
Mnuchin indicated that the White House was talking about more fiscal measures to ease the pain. Mnuchin said the federal government did not want to bail out states that were poorly managed. I don't understand how you can specify who is... They all poorly managed. If they're all asking for money, they're all poorly managed. That's my thought. The White House is pushing for a payroll tax cut. I thought we read about that there's no way that they could do the payroll tax cut. It's an attractive
point. The Trump can't, but theoretically the Congress could initiate that. It's just that
The payroll tax goes to Social Security, Medicaid, and Medicaid, and there's no way they could cut it. Those programs would go belly up.
Politically, yeah. I mean, the Republicans who are, or the small cadre in the White House right now is talking about essentially selling, Treasury bills to cover that as, a loan against the Social Security and Medicare trust funds. But that will be highly controversial, and in an election year, I cannot believe it has one iota of a chance. Certainly not in the House. So that's dead on arrival.
So they create the 20-year bond to pay for the payroll cut for Social Security and those programs. Okay. The most perverse number in this whole report was on worker pay. After years of waiting for wages to accelerate, the official number saw a gigantic surge in the average hourly earnings of 5.2% since February and 8.2% year over year. How can that happen?
Well, as it goes on to say, it's a reflection of how the job losses were so overwhelmingly concentrated among lower income service industry workers. The So the remaining employed people in the upper ends of the income scale. And it just so happens that the way this figure is calculated, you saw substantial increases. The thing to remember, ladies and gentlemen, is just to forget them because they're meaningless, largely, except to the extent they show that the vast majority of unemployed people are the lower income scales.
Yeah.
I mean, it was so extreme at the low end that it caused this ridiculous-looking rise in pay growth. The job losses were relatively less for among people who make more money and can work from home. How long can that disconnect last, and how big will layoffs get among white-collar workers who make more money? Well, one important thing to remember is the expansion of the unemployment insurance program that was put in place at the end of March as part of the CARES Act. There's all that controversy over how some laid-off workers might actually be getting bigger checks than they were while working at their jobs. You know, as such, I mean, despite the gigantic scale of the layoffs, it is possible that the fiscal expansion has done a decent job of smoothing over some on some of the lost income over the short term, and thus allows for overall economic demand to hold up like it apparently is showing, albeit uneasily. However, as layoffs climb the income ladder, and we'll see more reality of that in May, unemployment insurance will replace lost household income less and less, forcing more demand destruction as households cut back spending even further than they are now. So, how many of the laid-off workers will return to work in the weeks ahead? And what will Congress do to further replace losses to household income? Well, we don't know for sure, but more on the latter in a few minutes.
Well, you know, I think that's what bothers me the most. You have Mnuchin. This morning, he said that the administration is unfazed with the federal government's historic $3 trillion in spending to combat the virus, thanks to the nation's very low interest rate. You know, it's the arrogance in which they say it.
Oh, man, that's just not a good message.
Yeah, I mean,
not a good message to send.
We're just and it's not my money, so
there you go.
It's kind of like going shopping with somebody else's credit card, you know what I mean? You really enjoy that. One of the reasons he does feel so comfortable with us spending all this money is because interest rates are very low. And we're taking advantage of long-term rates. Between 10 years, 20 years, 30 years, we're borrowing an awful lot of money long-term so that we can lock in this $3 trillion for a very, very long period of time. Mnuchin said the Treasury would stop short of an actual refinancing where it brought back existing debt. Interesting. He said that the White House wants to seize the opportunity afforded by low interest rates and that sort of refinancing without repurchasing existing Treasury notes from the marketplace. They really are doing some incredible fuzzy math here, for lack of a better way for a description. And they're just doing it with such ease. I mean, with no lack of concern. It's just incredible, Dave. And of course, the big story of this, what he's saying, is we don't want to disturb the markets too much. We don't want to disturb the markets too much. It's unbelievable, Dave.
Well, long-term Treasury interest rates are trading near their lowest levels on record. The yields were up today. The 10-year note was at 0.68 early this morning. I think it closed in the sevens. That's down from 1.87% in December. It's north of 3% as recently as 2018. The 30-year bond rate traded at 1.38 this morning, down from 4.5 in 2011, coming out of the Great Recession. Now, the combination of a significant spike in federal deficit spending and reduced tax revenues has forced the Treasury Department to think in new ways to help foster appetite for U.S. bonds. So it announced last week, as we mentioned, that it will launch a 20-year bond later this month, I believe May 20th, in an effort to fund a record $3 trillion in borrowing this quarter. The auction of May 20th will feature a sale of $20 billion worth as part of an effort to push the debt levels further out in terms of duration.
I wonder who really is controlling these numbers. Or, as I've always claimed, they're just digits and they can go in there and just create digits out of thin air. And, I mean, it just proves that it just doesn't mean anything. I mean, these numbers, as large as they are, all of these actions just have no reactions. And it's not reality. Dave, when does reality strike?
I don't know. But we'll know it when it hits.
Yeah, and that's the day we wake up to a whole different world. And all of a sudden your world, that your retirement accounts and your pension accounts that you thought were safe, is going to be Zippo. Because we'll wake up one day to a whole different world. The world will change overnight. We saw a little bit of it with this virus, how much it can change pretty quick. But this isn't the overnight event. That has yet to happen. And we don't know when that event will be. But kind of seems that this one might be the one that we've been experiencing, might be the first domino. But that still remains to be seen. We did see oil jump on the Saudis are pledging beginning June 1st, the kingdom is going to cut output by an additional 1 million barrels per day. What's 1 million barrels per day going to do? I mean, when they cut 10, everybody was saying they needed 30. Now they're cutting one. But
just trying to lead by example.
But that, combined with the cuts agreed to by OPEC and its oil-producing allies, brings their total cut to roughly 4.5 million barrels per day below its record April production level. Production for June will now be 7.5 million BPDs. West Texas Intermediate, the course, is, you know, what we talk about, the U.S. benchmark traded 7% higher at 25.58 before settling down. Saudi Arabia also said that it would scale back May production. Saudi press agency statement said the kingdom aims through this additional cut to encourage OPEC and participants as well as other producing countries to comply. We promise. We really will. Dave?
Yes, we stand to serve. Oil's coming off its second straight positive week as investors have cheered signs that demand recovery is underway amid ongoing production cuts. WTI jumped 25% last week in one of its best weeks in history. International Brent rose 17%. Still, prices are well below their highs, and their path to recovery is far from certain. The head of oil markets at Rystad Energy, it's a big analytical firm, said despite the production curtailments that commenced this month, traders start to realize that the size of the supply-demand imbalance leaves little for optimism. He added that storages in the U.S. continue to fill up with crude, and we are coming closer to tank tops by the day. And that should have the opposite effect on prices as time goes on.
You would think, but we live in this world of fantasy. You know, not even during the Great Recession and bankruptcies of General Motors and Chrysler did the automotive industry come to a standstill like it has now. U.S. automakers are losing billions of dollars every month, with the majority of American factories shuttered since March. You have dealer showrooms closed or running on a limited basis. Detroit automakers, and that includes Ford, Fiat, Chrysler, are weathering the pandemic storm without talk of bankruptcies or the need for the same level of assistance that the airline industry just received. And it is a stark contrast from 2008 and 2009. The automakers learned the lesson the hard way of we need to improve the balance sheet. Much of today's optimism is a result of the Great Recession. During that time, the Detroit automakers were forced to shed billions in capital expenditures and structural cost. From then on, executives such as GM CEO Mary Barra made it their mission to fortify balance sheets in preparation for the next downturn, despite not knowing when or how it would occur. That's what businesses are supposed to do.
Yeah, in the good times. That's
in
right.
In the good times.
I mean, say what you will about the big automakers. I mean, in this respect, they were being smart. I mean, those efforts resulted in tens of billions of dollars in available cash, less leverage, and more flexible union contracts for vehicle production. That helps save money when plants are idled, as they are right now. Too big to fail, Morgan Stanley conducted a shutdown analysis earlier this year that gave it confidence that GM, Ford, and others can largely avoid the fate that many of them experienced in the Great Recession. To boost liquidity, the three automakers have collectively drawn down about $45 billion in credit lines to make sure they have enough cash on hand to survive the next few quarters without much, if any, production. Each of the automakers has said that they have enough cash available to make it into at least the fourth quarter without revenue if necessary. Now, it doesn't appear it will be necessary, that is. Michigan's governor announced late last week the state's auto manufacturers can resume operations this week.
Alrighty, we're heading into a break right now. Please stay tuned, ladies and gentlemen. You're listening to Financial Survival. I'm Melody Cederstrom, and I'm here with my co-host, Dave Allen.
Food prices have increased over 40%. Energy prices have increased over 20%. Wheat and gas prices have increased over 70%. What's going to be next? Do you see these trends reversing or even stabilizing? All fiat currencies have always failed and collapsed their economies on their way down. The Roman Empire, China, France, Argentina, Finland, Mexico, Russia, Zimbabwe all tried fiat currency and all collapsed into chaos. Meanwhile, the dollar has lost over 97% of its gold value since 1971, when an ounce of gold was valued at $35. If your assets are in paper, you are in danger. Protect your assets with gold and silver. Visit Discount Gold and Silver Trading at DGScoins.com. That's DGScoins.com or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 800-375-4188. Protect yourself and your family.
We all know that Berkey Water Purification Systems are the most trusted name in water filtration. As an authorized Berkey dealer for over 6 years and serving thousands of satisfied customers, the Berkey Guy offers amazing specials for Berkey Water Filtration Systems. The Berkey Light Systems include a set of self-sterilizing and recleanable black purification elements that purify water by removing chlorine, pathogenic bacteria, cysts, and parasites to non-detectable levels and remove harmful chemicals such as herbicides and pesticides. Order the Berkey Light System today. today, complete with two Black Berkey Elements for only $231, and the Berkey Guy will ship your order free of charge. With the purchase of a Berkey Light, the Berkey Guy is also offering a set of fluoride and arsenic filters for only $39.99. That's over 30% off the retail price. Call the Berkey Guy at 1-877-886-3653. That's 1-877-886-3653. Or order online at GoBerkey.com. That's GoBerkey.com today.
And welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. You're listening to Financial Survival, brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver Trading. 1-800-375-4188. I love the people at the post office. I have some good friends that work at the post office, family that works at the post office, and they made this announcement that they shed $4.5 billion just in the first quarter. That's more than double its loss over the same period last year, and warned that the COVID-19 could severely hurt its finances over the next 18 months. Now, the Postal Service's Board of Governors met at a critical juncture as it faces accusations from the White House that it charges package shippers such as Amazon too little. They do. Postmaster General Megan Brennan, she's stepping down, it's about time, warned that the Postal Service, would need financial assistance. The stark reality is that the pandemic will cause meaningful near and long-term implications from the steep decline in revenue we will suffer this year and in the coming years. That will endanger our ability to fulfill our universal service missions absent congressional intervention. Well, she also added that the Postal Service had requested funding from Congress and unrestricted access to borrowing. She told a congressional committee last month that the new coronavirus alone could mean $13 billion in lost revenue this year. Well, why don't they quit making them pay their retirement accounts 5 years in advance? That would be helpful. They're the only ones that have been instructed to do that. I think it's 5 years. Might even be more. It's prepaid up front. Why don't they renegotiate that? You know, instead of begging for money from government, and increase the rates for Amazon, Dave.
Yeah, right. I mean, the meeting comes 2 days after the postal governors announced that they had selected Republican donor Louis DeJoy to be the next Postmaster General. Some more pinstripe patronage. That's all our government and quasi-governmental services need.
Yeah.
The Postal Service was struggling before efforts to stop the threat of the new coronavirus prompted a widespread economic shutdown. It's funded entirely through services and postage, and now has been hurt by advertisers' reduction of direct mail during the pandemic. Congress has authorized the Treasury Department to lend the Postal Service up to $10 billion as part of the CARES Act, but President Trump has threatened to block it.
Why would he block it?
I'm not sure.
Just because of Amazon?
Yes. Yes. Because of Amazon being owned by Jeffrey
Bezos.
Bezos, who also owns the Washington Post, who happens to be a major critic of the administration. Besides, I'm not sure if he can under the Budget and Empowerment Control Act of 1974, I believe. Not to say one try. Certainly could be used as leverage.
And I don't know how he can say that they charge too little to deliver packages. He's talking about everybody. And I'm thinking,
Yes. Hey,
has anybody seen what registered and insured shipping is of late? When it used to cost us less than $10, now I don't get a package out for hardly under $40.
Really?
$30. Yeah. You get any value to it, yeah, and it pumps it right up there. And, I mean, it's incredible. And, Dave, I told you this during the break. A lot of people told me who work at the post office, it's like Christmas. They're shipping so many packages. They can't keep up. So they might have lost revenue going out from magazines and so forth, but you had to have think that they've made would have made it up by the packaging.
Yeah, I've got to look into studies or analyses that look into the quote value or opportunity cost of the discounts that Amazon and the other major shippers get. I mean, it's got to be tens of billions of dollars, I would think.
I was also told by the post office that what happens is Amazon demands, in order to have the contract with them, to deliver on Sundays and overtime.
Yes.
And that has cost the post office lots of money.
Yeah.
A lot of overtime. Let's go ahead and talk about something different. This is kind of interesting, Dave. Your levity is golden today?
Yeah. I mean, last week, we know, is the 75th anniversary of Victory in Europe Day. And they stormed the French beaches on D-Day. They helped liberate a concentration camp, and they fought in the Battle of the Bulge. These seven World War II vets weren't about to let a pandemic keep them from marking the 75th anniversary, the end of the war in Europe. Ranging in age from 96 to 100, the veterans held their salutes as the president and Melania Trump joined them for a commemoration at the World War II Memorial. The president and Melania participated in a wreath-laying ceremony and toured the memorial. They paused in front of a wall of stars with the phrase, "Here we mark the price of freedom," before they returned to the White House. Now, Stephen Melnikoff, who's now 100 years old, was an infantryman whose army unit was responsible for capturing, listen to this, more than 10,000 German soldiers. Melnikoff said it was a tough battle. He lives near Baltimore. Speaking of his unit, he said, "I was with them constantly for 11 months, except the weeks and months I spent in the hospital after he had been shot in the neck." Other vets joining Trump were Gregory Malikian, he's 97, from Phoenix, who sent the coded message to the world that the Germans had unconditionally surrendered. Mm. Well, Donald Halverson, 97, of Minnesota, he saw some of the war's fiercest fighting in Italy. John Coates, 96, of Maryland, he fought in the Battle of the Bulge. And Jack Myers, also 97, of Hagerstown, Maryland, he was part of a unit that liberated the Dachau concentration camp. White House spokesperson Judd Deere said, "These heroes are living testaments to the American spirit of perseverance and victory, especially in the midst of dark days." Now, Melnikoff described himself as striving toward new goals. He's the 100-year-old, and that includes golf. He said, "My mission now that I'm 100 is to make sure many young people know the story of what happened 75 years ago. Good for him. I want the people to remember so this will never happen again." He's also looking ahead to play a golf game that same day. Melnikoff says he plays three times a week and, according to the background provided by the White House, is scheduled to set a world record in the summer as the oldest golfer to play on a course in Scotland. I wonder if it'll be one of the president's courses. Were you thinking the same thing?
Yes, I was.
Melnikoff said, "Golf is the greatest game and you can play it till you're 100 years old." And he actually knows. And that, Melody, is this week's Levity is Golden.
Well, I hope I'm playing golf when I'm 100.
How about it? I hope I'm watching golf at 100.
So I have to play three times a week, he said?
Whew!
Three times a week.
That'll keep you in golfing shape.
All right, I better get out there and at least do one a week.
Well, probably bring your already impressive handicap down even lower.
Yeah, right. 81% of small U.S. companies surveyed by Global Payments Network, Veeam, they expect the new coronavirus pandemic to affect their businesses over the next 12 to 16 months. Nearly 90% are bracing for an economic extended slowdown. Veeam, which helped thousands of small companies apply for loans under the federal government's $660 billion emergency PPP, the Paycheck Protection Program, said small businesses were moving quickly to adapt to the changing climate. Of the 690 firms surveyed, 65% said they had either submitted an application or planned to do so in the future. Small Business Administration, as of Friday, has approved more than 2.5 million loans, totaling $536 billion. The U.S. economy has been particularly hit hard, as we talked about, the unemployment. And, of course, the crisis is having a mixed impact on small businesses. Veeam's chief executive, Marwan Forsley, with some companies struggling to survive while others are benefiting from their businesses being deemed essential or they're switched to working online from workers' homes, Dave.
Yeah, Forsley added, Melody, that despite all the uncertainty, they're trying to make changes in their businesses to either benefit from the situation or to repurpose their businesses so they're not as bad impacted. Now, nearly 70% of the companies surveyed cited some uncertainty about the U.S. economy for the rest of this year. 55% said they already experienced some significant impact to their revenues. About a third of them were more optimistic, suggesting that some industries were better positioned to thrive in the current environment, citing online retailers and other e-commerce businesses. More than half the companies that reported moderate to high supply chain disruptions as a result of factory shutdowns, border restrictions, and other factors, mainly furloughs. And more than a third said they were now setting up regional supply chains or rapidly pivoting them to make needed supplies.
Well, I want to talk about the Chinese investment in the United States dropped to $5 billion in 2019, and that's a slight decrease from a year earlier and the lowest level since the Great Recession of 10 years ago. The new analysis attributed the investment slowdown to Chinese restrictions on outbound capital, more regulatory oversight in the U.S., slower Chinese economic growth, and rising tensions between the United States and China. As we've been discussing on the program, relations between the U.S. and China have deteriorated in recent weeks. President Trump just last Friday said he was undecided about whether to end the so-called Phase 1 U.S.-China trade deal. Now, this statement came just hours after top trade officials from both countries had pledged to press ahead with implementing its despite the virus. Trump, who has blamed China's early handling of the coronavirus outbreak in Wuhan, for causing the thousands of deaths and millions of jobs losses in the U.S., has threatened to terminate the trade deal if China isn't going to meet its purchase agreements, Dave.
Yeah, and today's report, Melody, also shows that Chinese investment had slowed even before the pandemic outbreak. Stephen Orlins, who's president of the National Committee on U.S.-China Relations, that's one of the groups behind this report, said that both countries should resist a retreat to economic nationalism in the event of a global recession. Now, U.S. investment in China increased slightly in 2019 to $14 billion. That's up $1 billion from a year before. However, the pandemic has put additional pressure on U.S. companies in China, raising questions about whether to move operations out of the country to diversify their supply chains. More details about this report and on Chinese investment in the U.S. in general as we learn more in the coming weeks and months.
Well, you know, the one I wanted to talk about, there was an Iranian warship who accidentally struck another one with a missile during an exercise, but they killed 19 sailors and wounded 15 others. The incident took place during training in the Gulf of Oman, a sensitive waterway that connects to the Strait of Hormuz, which about a fifth of the world's oil passes through. Iran, they regularly conduct exercises in that area, and the frigate fired at a training target released by a support ship. However, the support ship stayed too close to the target and was hit. So FARS News Agency quoted an unidentified military official as denying some Iranian media reports that the hit ship had sunk. Now, the Navy statement said investigations were undergoing regarding the cause of this incident.
The Dutch-made Konarak vessel, which was purchased before Iran's 1979 Islamic Revolution, had been overhauled as recently as 2018 and reportedly was equipped with four cruise missiles. The incident took place at a time of heightened tensions between Iran and the U.S. It's 2018, when the U.S. withdrew from the multi-nation nuclear deal and when Washington subsequently reimposed sanctions on Iran. Of course, animosity deepened in early January when a U.S. drone strike in Baghdad killed Iran's top military commander, Qasem Soleimani. The latest accident, Melody, I think it just shows how easy it is for an accident to occur that could draw Iran and the U.S. into a much more serious military conflict.
Well, that's all the time we have for today's program. Thank you, Dave, for being my co-host.
Pleasure.
And yes,
thanks for having me.
Well, you're welcome. I enjoyed it today. I want to thank everyone for listening, and please be safe out there, and God bless.
Bye-bye.
And still there never seems to be a single penny left for me. That's too bad.